The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, and welcome to That's a Laugh. I'm Sharon Silcox with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Summer's almost over, but not quite. There's still some time to go exploring, and Dave Barry, as always, has tons of advice to help you get every last bit of enjoyment out of your trip. Planning your trip to paradise is found in the book Dave Barry's Only Travel Guide You'll Ever Need by Dave Barry, published in 1991. Planning is a very important part of travel. Just ask Amelia Earhart, the famous woman aviatrix who in 1937 attempted to fly around the world in a twin-engine Lockheed and disappeared somewhere in the South Pacific and was never heard from again. This kind of thing can really put a damper on your vacation, yet it can easily be prevented if you do a little advanced research by asking some basic travel questions, such as 1. Will you be flying on a twin-engine Lockheed? 2. Will you ever be heard from again? 3. Will there be meal service? Oh, I realize that not everybody likes to plan every step of a vacation. Some people would rather just grab a backpack and a sleeping bag, stick out their thumbs, and start hitchhiking down the highway, enjoying the fun and adventure of not knowing what's around the bend. Most of these people are dead within hours, so planning is definitely the way to go. Step 1 is to decide on a destination. The two most popular travel destinations are 1. Domestic, 2. Foreign. The major advantage of domestic travel is that, with a few exceptions, such as Miami, most domestic locations are conveniently situated right here in the United States. This means that, on a domestic vacation, you are never far from the convenience of American culture in the form of malls, motels, Chicken McNuggets, Charmin bath tissue, car window suction cup Garfield dolls, lawyers, etc. Also, the United States contains an enormous amount of natural beauty. Although, I do not personally prefer nature as a vacation destination because of various factors, such as the dirt factor, the insect factor, and, of course, the snake factor. See Chapter 8, Camping, Nature's Way of Promoting the Motel Industry. The United States also contains some history, most of which is located in specially humidity-controlled rooms in Washington, D.C. Or, if you prefer to get off the beaten path, you can simply hop in the car and travel the highways and byways of this great land of ours, visiting its many proud little dirtbag towns such as Dwebemont, Ohio, Styptic Pencil Capital of the World. Often, there will be local fairs and festivals where the kids can ride on the whirling puke while mom and dad enjoy tasty local cuisine such as French fried potatoes, fried chicken, fried onion rings, fried dough, and fried frying oil fried with fried sugar. Of course, if rides are what you're after, you'll definitely want to visit one of the major themed attractions such as Six Flags over a large flat region or the world-famous Walt Disney World of hot, irritable, popcorn-bloated families waiting in enormous lines. See Chapter 4, Disney World on $263,508 a day. Many of these attractions feature exhibits simulating foreign nations such as Europe, thus enabling you to experience exactly what it would be like to be in another country, provided that it was a foreign country staffed by Americans and located inside a themed attraction. But if you prefer the real thing, you'll want to choose a foreign travel destination. The major problem here, as I mentioned in the introduction, is that foreign destinations tend to contain enormous quantities of foreigners. There's nothing you can do about this except grin and bear it. Unless you're in some foreign country where grinning is considered rude and is punishable by death, in which case you should frown and bear it. Or stick a finger up each nostril and bear it, or whatever they do when they bear it in that country. But that's exactly the problem. As an American who was raised in America and attended American schools where, despite years of instruction, the only thing you learned how to say in a foreign language is, The dog has eaten my brother. You will often find yourself totally disoriented in foreign situations. Europe, for example, is filled with knots of confused Americans, squinting at menus with no more comprehension than a seagull examining the space shuttle. What the hell does this mean? I think it means chicken of the hot trouser parts. Also, you will have to accept the fact that in foreign countries, you will never have the vaguest idea how much anything costs. All foreign countries have confusing money with names like the pound, the yen, the libra, the mark, the franc, the duane, the doubloon, and the kilometer, all of which appear to have been designed by preschool children. Not one of these monetary units is equal to a dollar or anything else, and all of them change in value on an hourly basis. This is all a result of the Marshall Plan, which was set up by General Marshall Plan after World War II as a means of making the entire rest of the world rich at our expense, the idea being that Americans traveling abroad would be so disoriented by foreign currency that every now and then one of them will buy a single croissant and leave a tip large enough to enable the waiter to retire for life. But that's the fun of traveling abroad. The sense of romance and mystery that comes from being an out-of-it bozo, from not knowing for sure whether the sign you're looking at says public park or radioactive waste area. One time, I was with a group of five people driving around Germany, and it took us an entire week to figure out that Einbahnstraße meant one-way street. We'd be driving around some German city, frowning at our map, scratching our pointy American heads, and saying, "Geez, we're on Einbahnstraße again. Ha ha, what a bunch of goober heads we were." Fortunately, everybody in Germany, including domestic animals, speak English better than the average U.S. high school graduate, so we were able to get clear directions from passing pedestrians. Planning your travel budget. The standard formula for computing travel costs is to figure out the total amount of available money you have, total it, then multiply this by at least 6. But even this formula is probably going to give you a low estimate because you usually have unexpected costs, as we can see by this breakdown of average travel costs. Travel, lodging, food, tips, 12%. T-shirts that you buy after 4 frozen drinks but that you can never actually wear, 17%. And finally, incidentals, 71%. What I mean by incidentals are those unexpected expenses that inevitably come up when you travel, such as buying replacement teeth, posting bail, bribing nuns, etc. My wife actually did bribe a nun once. We were in Rome trying to get into a famous cathedral, which, according to the guidebook, contained large quantities of architecture and, more important, a bathroom. See map page 15, The Toilets of Europe. Our guidebook said that the cathedral would be open, but when we got there, our path was blocked by a large, unforeseen nun who told us by means of stern gestures that it was closed, even though we could see tourists walking around in there. Being a seasoned international traveler with a certain amount of savoir-faire, I eventually realized what the deal was. So I slipped the nun a specific amount of Italian currency worth approximately 325 trillion libras, which at the then current rate of exchange was equal to roughly 57 cents American, or it could have been several thousand dollars. There was really no way to tell. But I do want to stress that whatever amount it was, I am certain the nun turned it directly over to the church. My point is that whenever and wherever you travel, you're going to have unanticipated expenses, and you need to anticipate them. Fortunately, the Visa and MasterCard people have a fine program for travelers under which you can charge everything. And then when you get back, you simply pay them small, convenient amounts for several years, which turns out to be nowhere near enough, so they confiscate your children, which is not entirely a bad thing. See Chapter 4, Traveling as a Family. Traveler's checks. Traveler's checks are very impressive pieces of paper that are backed by the full faith and credit of actor Carl Malden. They are accepted at thousands of shopping locations around the world, although almost never the location that you personally are shopping in. Nevertheless, traveler's checks are very popular with those travelers who have the brains of frozen vegetables. You've seen these people in those American Express traveler's check commercials. First traveler, oh no. Second traveler, what's wrong? First traveler, I left my wallet unguarded on a cafe table here in the middle of the squalid, poverty-ridden, crime-infested foreign city, and now it's gone. Second traveler, but that's impossible. Carl Malden to camera. Hi, I'm Carl Malden. First traveler, look, it's Raymond Burr. Carl Malden, if you lose your American Express traveler's checks, you can call for an immediate refund. First traveler, but we don't even know how to operate a telephone. Second traveler, I don't even remember which traveler I am. I think I'm the second traveler. First traveler, no, I'm the second traveler. Carl Malden to camera. American Express traveler's checks. A lot of people never even figure out how to cash them. Working with a travel agent. You should definitely have a travel agent. Why go through all the hassle of dealing with airlines, hotels, and rental car agencies yourself, only to see the arrangements get all screwed up, when with just a single phone call, you can have a trained professional screw them up for you? No, seriously, travel agents are wonderful. At least mine is. Her name is Ramona, and I'd literally be lost without her. I'll be on a business trip, and I'll wake up in a strange hotel room in bed with traces of minibar cheese in my hair, and in a disoriented panic, I'll call Ramona, and we'll have the following conversation. Me. Where am I? Ramona, checking her computer. You're in Houston. Me. Alarmed. Why? Ramona, you're on a business trip. Me. Can I come home yet? Ramona, checking her computer. No, you have to go to Detroit. Me. Very alarmed. Detroit? Ramona, checking her computer. And get that cheese out of your hair. I always do what Ramona says because she has the computer. Ramona could ship me off to the Falkland Islands if she felt like it. Ramona is also good at attempting to explain the airline fare system, which is governed by a powerful state-of-the-art computer that somebody apparently spilled a pitcher of Hawaiian punch into the brain of, and it has been insane ever since. I base this statement on the fact that if I fly from Miami to, for example, Tampa, the round fare trip fare is often hundreds of dollars more than what it costs to fly from Miami to, say, Singapore. This makes no sense. Singapore is in a completely different continent, whereas Tampa is so close to Miami that our stray bullets frequently land there. And what is worse, there is never just one fare to Tampa. There are dozens of them, and they are constantly mutating. And the more Ramona explains them to me, the more disoriented I become. Me. I need to go to Tampa on Thursday. Ramona, checking her computer. No, not Thursday. Me. No. Ramona. No, because there is a $600 penalty if you fly on a Thursday during a month whose name contains two or more vowels following two straight quarters of increased unemployment unless you are a joint taxpayer filing singly with two or more men on base, provided that you spend at least one Saturday night in a hotel room within 12 feet of a malfunctioning ice machine and you undergo a ritual initiation ceremony wherein airline ticket agents dance around you and put honey-roasted peanuts up your nose. Me. Book me on the Singapore flight. Renting a car. Renting a car offers many attractive advantages to the traveler. Independence, convenience, dependability, and a sudden massive lowering of the IQ. I know what I'm talking about here. I live in Miami. And every winter, we have a huge infestation of rental car drivers who come down here seeking warm weather and the opportunity to make sudden left turns without signaling across six lanes of traffic into convenience stores. My wife and I have affectionately nicknamed these people Alamos. because so many of them seem to rent their cars from Alamo, which evidently requires that every dock driver leave several major brain lobes as a deposit. We'll be driving along, and the driver in front of us will engage in some maneuver that is boneheaded even by the standards of Miami. Official motoring motto, death before yielding, and will shout, "Look out, Alamos!" We're tempted to stay off the highways altogether during tourist season. Just stockpile food and spend the entire winter huddled in our bedrooms. But we're not sure we'd be safe there. Not that I feel superior to the Alamos. I've rented many cars myself, and I have to admit that as soon as I get behind the wheel, I go into bozo mode. For one thing, I am instantly lost, and the only guidance I have is the rental car agency map, the sole function of which apparently is to show you the location of the rental car agency. So I'm disoriented. Plus, I'm constantly trying to adjust the mirrors, seat, air conditioning, steering wheel, etc. Plus, this is the most important part, I have to find a good radio station. This means I am devoting only about 2% of my brain to actually driving the car, and thus I, a person who tends to be extremely critical of other people's driving, am transformed into an Alamo, drifting along at 27 miles per hour in the left lane of the interstate with my left blinker on, trying to locate the FM button. Maybe. As a warning to other drivers, the federal government should require that all rental cars must have giant orange question marks sticking up out of their roofs. Choosing a car rental company. The car rental industry is extremely competitive, and often you can find some really good deals by keeping your eyes peeled for advertisements that look like this. Why pay more? Rent a car for just $3.99 a week, including unlimited mileage, Big Bob's car rental and miniature golf and full body massage. Certain restrictions apply to this offer, such as to get the actual car, you have to ride our courtesy van, which runs only during Lent. From the airport to our car rental facility, which is in the Soviet Union, where you will have to wait in line behind people who have been there since the Ford administration, because our rental fleet consists of a 1971 Plymouth Valiant with a tendency to catch fire, so we definitely recommend the insurance. As a smart shopper, you will definitely save big money by taking advantage of bargains such as these, although you should, of course, insist that the agency person explain the terms of the rental agreement before you sign it. You, what does this mean? Agency person, what does what mean? You, this part here where it says renter agrees that we get to keep his house. Agency person, know that? Nothing. You, relieved. Phew. Types of luggage. The type of luggage you carry says a lot about you. For example, if you're carrying somebody else's luggage, it says you're a thief. No, seriously, luggage is important, which is why most frequent travelers spend their entire lives looking for exactly the right piece of luggage, the one that is nice and compact but holds a lot of stuff. This is a waste of time, of course, because the truth is that a piece of luggage is nothing but a bag or a box with a handle on it, and under the laws of physics, which are strictly enforced in luggage, the size of the bag or the box determines how much it will hold, as can be seen by the following chart. Size of luggage unit, small. Amount of stuff luggage unit will hold, small amount. Size of luggage unit, medium. Amount of stuff luggage unit will hold, medium amount. Size of luggage unit large, amount of stuff luggage unit will hold, large amount, but still not enough. The infrequent traveler generally accepts these limitations and purchases one of those enormous hard-sided suitcases that have wheels and weigh about 87 pounds even when they're empty. But your frequent traveler never abandons the quest to find a miracle luggage unit that can hold more than it can actually hold. Over the course of a lifetime, the frequent traveler will purchase dozens of luggage units, frequently from advertisements in airplane in-flight magazines. You've probably seen the advertisements. There's a picture of what appears to be an ordinary carry-on suitcase, underneath which are about 70,000 words, which begin, "Amazing luggage breakthrough." A recent scientific discovery by researchers at the Stanford University School of Luggage Science has made possible the revolutionary new Laser 3000X Total Carry-On Wardrobe Unit. although although smaller than a standard clarinet case. This incredible unit, thanks to advanced luggage technology, can easily hold 8 men's suits or 14 women's full-length evening gowns, plus all the shirts, socks, ties, underwear, and clothing accessories you would need for 2 terms in Congress, plus all your toiletries, plus an actual working toilet. And that's not all. How many times have you said to yourself as a business traveler, why can't they design a carry-on bag with space for my tennis rackets, golf clubs, skis, and volleyball equipment? Well, look no farther, because the Laser 3000X, and so on. Ordinarily, you would take one look at this kind of advertisement and say, hey, get serious. But in the airplane environment, where you have nothing else to do except watch the movie, you find yourself reading all the way through it, and by the time you're on your third Bloody Mary and you've reached the part where the advertisement claims that this suitcase will do your tax returns for you, you're thinking, hey, this could be the answer to my luggage needs. So you whip out your Visa or MasterCard and fill out the order form, and 6 to 10 weeks later you receive a bag with a handle, a small bag with a handle, which, if you really pack it right, will hold 2 pairs of socks plus your dental floss. I know what I'm talking about. I have 17 of these things. How much luggage you can carry on a commercial airline flight? Federal Airline Administration regulations state that each passenger may have up to 17,000 pounds of carry-on luggage, provided that he or she can jam it all into the overhead baggage compartment. I am a veteran traveler, but I am still amazed at how much stuff some people will try to get up there. Entire households sometimes. These people are always directly in front of me. What do you mean I can't carry this on? They'll say to the airline personnel. I always carry this on. Sir, the airline personnel will say, that's a lawn tractor. But look, the person will say, it fits in the overhead baggage compartment. And the person will actually attempt to shove it in there, which is, of course, impossible because A, the tractor is too large, and B, the compartment already contains some other passenger's upright piano. But this will not stop the person from trying. No human emotion is more powerful than the grim determination of an airline passenger attempting to shove an inappropriate object into the overhead baggage compartment. What to pack? There are 2 major schools of thought on how to pack for traveling. These are known technically as my school and my wife's school. My school of packing is that you should never carry more things than you can fit into a standard sandwich bag. This way, you never put yourself in a position where you have to turn your belongings over to a commercial airline's crack luggage hiding department. Traces of airline luggage have been found on Mars, so I travel very light. And I found that this is really not a problem once I get adjusted to the stench resulting from wearing the same shirts and socks and, of course, underwear for as long as 2 weeks running. The advantage of this is that I get plenty of room to stretch out on airplanes because nobody will sit near me. The disadvantage is that the flight attendants also stay away, preferring to serve my dinner entree by flipping it at me, frisbee style, from as far as 25 feet away. And some of those airline entrees are hard enough to kill a person. My wife, on the other hand, would not think of leaving the house or for even half an hour without sufficient possessions in her purse alone to establish a comfortable wilderness homestead. So, when we travel, she packs many, many items. She buys these giant suitcases manufactured by shipbuilders, and she packs them with items for every conceivable contingency. Like, if we're going someplace in the tropics, she'll naturally pack an entire set of lightweight outfits, but she'll also pack an entire set of medium-weight outfits in case we have a cool snap, and a set of heavy outfits in case we get locked inside a meat freezer, and a waffle iron in case we get hungry for waffles while we're in there, and so on. So, we generally arrive at the airport with virtually all our worldly possessions. Our carry-on luggage alone is enough to prevent many planes from ever leaving the ground. They'll taxi down the runway, gaining speed, then, after a violent, grunting effort to take off, they'll continue right on taxiing, sometimes right into a harbor. That doesn't worry us, however, because my wife always brings plenty of scuba equipment. After we return home, weary from our travels and ready for a vacation from our vacation, it is, of course, time for school to start. The following poem is from the book Leading from Within, edited by Sam Introtor and Megan Scribner, published in 2007. The poem is titled The Peaceable Kingdom and is written by Paul Mariani. The short intro I will read was written by Robert Wood. As this poem makes refreshingly clear, leadership is relative. The poet is a leader in his field, an accomplished college professor, renowned biographer of major poets, and the author of 6 volumes of poetry. But his status is no match for 18 kindergartners. His wife, Eileen, also a teacher, clearly is the expert leader here. The Peaceable Kingdom. Once my wife brought home, I swear, 18 five-year-olds. 18! Her entire kindergarten class. I say 18, though I have no certain proof that that was the number, other than 18 was what Eileen, my wife, told me was the number who'd been there. The kids themselves, I mean, never stood long enough for me to make a count. I remember meeting them en masse as I watched them all suddenly mount the back porch, 2 by 2, the other teacher and 3 mothers bringing up the rear. The kids seemed orderly enough, but as the first one reached the top of the porch steps, I could feel their little engines already beginning to shake the joists and beams around me. Eileen and the big ones went inside to make sure the chocolate milk and cookies were all done. I was to hold the fort alone for the next 5 minutes, talk to them, introduce myself, hold court, sort of maintain order, you understand, for maybe 3-4 seconds. The line kept order, and order tighter, friends, than what you may be hearing here in mine. And then, just like that, the whole thing fell apart. The baby falcons could not hear the falconer. The great invisible clockwork spring that held it all together suddenly went boing as first one, then two, then all 18 were rolling head over heels, somersaulting down the hill behind the house. They demanded to be fed. They grew fangs and talons. They went bouncing off the walls. Their groans and shouts increased, except as an old pear tree up which to climb or something to get round, I had already ceased even to exist, and I was screaming for Eileen. In a moment, she was there, and the unsprung revolutionary mass returned instantly to order, pair by pair by pair, with hot chocolate and a cookie for each kid. Friends, I saw her take that Lilliputian horde and read them all a story. I saw them flock around her. I saw them feeding on her every word. Before we end today, I have a special announcement. Spencer, I want to wish you happy birthday and the happiest of years. That's all we have time for today. Join me next month for That's a Laugh. I'm Sharon Silcox with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website at trianglereadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. See you next time.